south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, you know, the age-old question is why the Brits have such bad teeth. Now, we may have spoken about this before, but we never had it from the horse's mouth, you know, from a Brit himself who's got bad teeth. You know, many moons ago, I lived in the UK for a couple of years, actually. And it really is a shock at first to Americans, who generally have pretty good teeth, probably some of the best in the world. You wonder, how can even most rich Brits have bad teeth? Though, for the latest generation of Brits, the Wires and the Zeers, things have changed. You see it in some of the Hollywood movies where they have British actors. As for young actors and media Brits, their teeth are not disgusting. Well, that's because Brits these days are aware that they're stereotyped around the world as having bad teeth. So the up-and-coming newer generations, I'd say the under-30 crowd, generally have pretty good teeth, at least the upwardly mobile ones. Now, I'll tell you, having lived there myself, there's something that Americans just don't understand about the Brits. The average Brit, to us, would be a poor American, almost white trash. Yet in the UK, they call themselves middle class. When you meet a so-called middle-class Brit, he lives in a tiny little cracker box house, and he probably doesn't own it. He doesn't own a car either. In other words, what I'm saying is a middle-class Brit is not nearly the same as a middle-class American. In fact, I have a couple of Brit friends who, as young 20-somethings, backpacked through the U.S. They just couldn't believe the difference between middle-class America and middle-class Britain. In fact, one of my buddies was in the British military. He signed up for a couple of years. And because, you know, the Brits are our allies, so to speak, every time we start a stupid war like in Afghanistan, whatever, the Brits tag along. They send a few battalions in themselves. And my one British friend, who was a private during one of those stupid squabbles, said he could not believe the difference between the way the American soldiers were outfitted and the Brits were outfitted. He said even the food was 10 times better for the Americans. Their equipment, nicer, newer, much higher tech. But getting back to bad British teeth, and why the generation of Brits coming to age right now have much better teeth. Well, expat Lawrence says, a Brit from London who's living in Central America now, he says, Johnny, when you see a young Brit with absolutely straight white teeth, like most Americans have, it's because they've gone to a private dentist. You see, they have national health care in Britain, and that includes dental work, except anything cosmetic like orthodontics or teeth whitening, or even fixing discolored front teeth, not covered. So when you see a young Brit with really nice straight white teeth, that means his parents really sacrificed a lot to send him to a private dentist, who generally are very expensive. They're expensive because in dental school they don't train British dentists in cosmetic dentistry. That's sort of a specialty. So general dentists drill and fill, and cosmetic dentists are like 1 in 100. So the few that are trained in it can charge a lot. Then Lawrence says, I'll quote here, he says, the reason most of us had bad teeth was the unintended consequences of the British welfare state. It might sound like a lot of BS to an American, but the truth is that the National Health Service dentists are paid by the amount of fillings and extractions they could rack up per month. So that's exactly what dentists in the UK specialized in, extractions and fillings. In fact, he says, if Americans would look at British TV, which they don't see, but if they did, they'd be appalled to see famous newscasters, politicians, panel show and game show hosts, etc., often with dingy, dark, crooked teeth. Lawrence says, in fact, as a kid, he remembers Prime Minister Harold Wilson having absolutely black teeth. And that was the Prime Minister of England. Black teeth. And when I asked my mother about that, she told me, oh, that's because he smokes a pipe, son. And it's still like that today. If you're in the UK, tune in any TV show. Check out the close-ups, especially with the older generation, the over 50 crowd. Gnarly, stained, and disgusting. Celebrities with teeth like that would never fly in the US. But it's still well accepted, even tolerated, in the UK. All because of the unintended consequences of the welfare state. national health care and free dentistry. That is, just enough free dentistry so that your teeth don't rot or fall out. But if you want them to look nice, white, and straight, it'll be out of your pocket. The other unintended consequences of a welfare state and free medical or dental care is that people get so used to it, if there's even a suggestion of a co-payment or extra charge, the people are up in arms. So then Lauren says, be careful what you ask for, Americans. Look at us Brits as an example of what not to do. Right around World War II, we asked for national health care and got it. You think it's just a coincidence or an anomaly that us Brits have a reputation worldwide of having the ugliest, crookedest, worst-looking teeth in the first world? Again, I say, you Americans, be careful what you ask for. And finally, Lawrence says in his email, I've noticed after living down in Central America a couple of years that both kids and adults seem to have very straight, nicely aligned teeth. Must be something to that tortilla and rice and beans diet. He signs off by saying, good show, Johnny. As long as they stay good, I'll keep listening. Long-time listener, first-time commenter, Lawrence. All right, Lawrence, thanks for that. You know, I have a comment about why Latin kids and adults have much better teeth than you'd expect, since a lot of the young kids, especially the ones out in the boonies, suck on sugar cane all day because it's growing everywhere. If you break a little piece off yourself and stick it in your mouth, it's dead sweet. So, like a toothpick or a stick of hay stuck in an old farmer's mouth in a Hollywood movie. Oftentimes, when you're driving around out in the boonies, you'll see some kids walking by sucking on a little piece of cane sugar stalk. You'd think that'd lead to dental nightmares and a recipe for oral disaster, right? Well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But dentists here in Latin America tell me it's not so much at all the kids out in the boonies with rotted teeth. Dentists in the big city, anyway, will admit the biggest and most rampant cases of tooth rot they see are with the children of the rich and the children of indulgent parents, Latinos and expats. Man, that sounds familiar. You know, you go into a Walmart or a Price Mart here in Latin America, generally the kids are really well behaved, but once in a while there'll be some out of control kids bouncing off the walls, grabbing candy, cookies, and sweets off the shelf, throwing it in their mother's carton, often even tearing off the wrapper and eating it right there. And although most Latin American kids would never try such a stunt, there are those indulgent parents that let their kids get away with anything. A habit they most likely learned from wealthy gringo parents who've been letting their kids get away with that kind of outrageous crap for years. After all, if you have money, isn't it much easier to give your kid what he wants than to have him whine and wail in public? Of course, it's a completely different story for parents who don't have the money to indulge their kids. Those kids know better than to cry and whine. They learned a long time ago if they whine and make a spectacle of themselves, they won't get the candy but a whack across the butt. Hey, if that sounds mean to you, if you don't like it, stay up in Cleveland. By the way, I know a couple of gringo families living down here in Latin America who've set some really bad examples for their kids. Of course, you know, gringo families have lots more money than Latin families, so they can indulge their kids to great heights. In fact, with one particular indulgent and extremely lenient gringo dad I know, I remember one day I was visiting him at his house and I saw his daughter. She must have been 5 or 6 years old. She had metal caps on practically every one of her baby front teeth. And I said to my gringo buddy, "What's up with that?" And he said to me with a real shocked look on his face, I took her to the dentist because she was having tooth pain. And he found that practically every one of her front teeth was rotted. Yeah, big surprise. Every time I saw that little girl, she was sucking on ice cream or candy or any number of pastries they'd keep out on the table 24/7. The kid could dive into them anytime she felt like it. Man, I'll tell you, when that kid whined, the parents jumped to the tune in that household. But me and every other visitor to that house kept our mouths shut. You can't get involved, you know? Oh, and speaking of snaggletooth, crooked dentition. You know, I'm not the only one to have noticed that most Latin American kids have pretty straight, nice teeth. Yet, great numbers of teenage and 20, even 30-somethings are sporting braces. Hell, I even know a 60-something female Latin American lawyer who's got a full set of braces. So what's up with straightening teeth that are already so straight that any Brit would give his eye teeth for? Then again, a Brit's eye teeth aren't anything to write home about. But the question is, why do so many Latin Americans with seemingly good teeth have braces? It's all the rage. It's the fashion. La moda, as they say in Spanish. La moda, the mode. It's just simply cool to have braces. Now, I know I spoke about this before in a past show a long time ago. And back then, 5 or 6 years ago, it was really the moda, the fashion. In fact, you know how up in the States, the latest greatest trend in braces is to have invisible braces, ones that are behind your teeth so you can't see them when you smile. Well, I'll tell you, that's exactly the opposite of what Latinos want when they get braces. Because down here, it's a sign of wealth, a status symbol. They want everyone to know about it, so they get shiniest, most metallic braces available. And the little Latina girls with braces will regularly switch the colored rubber bands on their braces because that's all the fashion too. Though I have to admit, it seems to me I'm seeing less and less people with braces. 5 or 6 years ago, it was a very big deal to have braces. It marked you as upper class. Though that quickly proved to be a false stereotype, as dentists began to offer extremely flexible payment plans. Dentists down here will tell you practically everyone with braces is on an extremely long-term payment plan. And this might shock you too. I know I mentioned this in a show a long time ago. If you get braces done in the States, it's going to cost you between $5,000 and $10,000. Down here in Latin America, the average rate's from $600 to $1,000. Once again, falling into line with most other medical procedures, about 20% or less of what it costs to get the same thing done up in the States. So back to the idea that you look like you're in a higher socioeconomic bracket than you really are when you're wearing braces. Think about this. If your braces cost, let's say, $1,000, and the whole treatment takes about 2 years, she'll pay about $40 a month on a payment plan. That means, for example, if you're a young 20-something girl working as a teller in a bank, and you're making the average Latin American salary, which is $300 to $350 a month, she could swing $40 a month, even more likely if she's living with mom and dad, which is what most 20 or even 30-something Latin Americans do, at least till they get married. Then that married couple often ends up living with mom and dad too. God, I don't know how that isn't a recipe for disaster, you know, living with your in-laws, but I see it all the time. Most American newlyweds would never survive that. But what do I know about newlywed life in the States? Though I know one thing, the times, they are a-changing. Man, they're a-changing. I mean, look, who'd have thought so many young adults, 20-something, 30-something, even 40-something Americans, would be living in their old bedroom back in mom and dad's house? I understand it's an epidemic up in the States. In my day, it would have been unthinkable, a recipe for boozing and drugs and depression. By the way, you want to hear a little family secret, a symptom of the times? Yet another reason why I'll never go back to the States? Though I know if I die, someone might ship my body back. You can be sure if they do, I'll be scratching and kicking in the casket. Talk about the times, they are a-changing. I got a relative who is single, with a job, who hit 30 years old and was still living in his ma's basement. A very entitled kid, parents gave him everything. The kid switched majors in college, you know, 4 or 5 times. Got fired or quit a couple of jobs along the way because he didn't like the hours or the boss or something didn't suit him. Well, guess what? He wrecked a couple of his mom and dad's cars. Finally, they had enough. Told him to leave. He had to get out. He wouldn't do it. They threatened but didn't push it. They didn't have the balls to throw him out. After all, he was their entitled little boy, their only son. I remember over the years, his parents threatened to punish him a lot, but they never followed through. So anyway, he's 30-something. His parents want him out. He won't leave. To get him out, guess what they decided to do? They bought him a frickin' house. Not a crap starter house in a shit neighborhood. A nice house. You know, maybe the second house a couple moves on up to after they've had their starter house a few years. And you know, when I heard that story coming from my own family, the jerk kid's parents still put a positive spin on it, saying, it's every parent's duty to help his kid out. Give him a leg up. Yeah, I'd give him a leg up, all right? A leg up his ass. And now you know why I'm not much of a kid lover. When you see that kind of crap going down in your own family, it kind of sours you to the whole prospect. But that's just me. Maybe I'm the jerk. What I've noticed is that lots of Americans have kids like that. Kids in their 20s and 30s that still live at home. Kids they still support or subsidize. Even married kids they still support and subsidize. And they make excuses too. After all, it's every parent's duty to give their kid a leg up in life. Why, when it comes to their kids, are American parents such wishy-washy weaklings? Of course, you do know that it's you baby boomer and millennial parents that allowed this woke disease to spread throughout the States. You complain now, but you let it happen. You subsidized it. You paid 50 or 100 grand or even more for your kids to go to university and study useless degrees. You might as well call them let's party degrees like drama, psychology, sociology, art history, human resources, theater, music, photography, physical education, Native American and African American studies. Oh, and let's not forget the all-time most useless degree, gender studies. The fact is, all those degrees will keep you in mommy's basement and make you a charter member of the minimum wage club. Then again, if you and your mom are all right with that, it's all good. All right, changing the subject now. Well, not completely. You see, I had a kind of a disagreeable experience with another woke gringo traveler I'd met. So anyway, just recently I was in Mexico on the Mayan Riviera side. That would be Playa del Carmen, Cancun, Tulum. Very, very touristy area. As soon as you land at the airport, it just screams tourism. Now, as for me, you longtime listeners know, I'm off the gringo tourist trail probably 98-99% of the time, but once in a while, you stumble into a tourist spot. Just by coincidence, an airport layover, or by hook and crook. This was one of those times. And I happened to be in a coin-operated laundromat. And I'll tell you, it's been years since I've been in a coin-operated laundromat. And man, I was shocked to see the machines take credit cards. I can't believe it. Luckily, they still take cash and tokens. I'm one of those guys. Anyway, when you're in a laundromat, you're stuck there for an hour, maybe two, and there's always a couple of people hanging around because they're stuck there too. So I'm sitting there, washing and tumbling my laundry, and the lady working the machine next to mine was on her cell phone talking in perfect English. An American for sure. Actually, an American Indian. She had shorts on, bare midriff, showing quite a bit of skin and tattooed in a lot of different places. She was one of those overweight girls, you know, that should never be flashing bare stomach. But, you know, some people just don't get it or must think it's sexy or something. Anyway, to me, and I'd say 99% of the guys I know, a fat girl with a bare midriff. Can I use the word repulsive? I know it's a bit rough, but I just did. Oh, and for sure, there are a lot of guys that should never be showing their bellies either, but they usually don't. Guys don't go around doing that. Big fat guys at least have the decency to wear a baggy t-shirt. They somehow get it. That they shouldn't be putting their inverted volcano of a navel on display. And thankfully, they don't. So anyway, here I was in the laundromat with this lady that was showing way too much skin. And when she got off the phone, you know, in order to break the dead silence, I said, "So, where are you from?" She said, "California." Big surprise, huh? I said, "How long are you here for?" She said, "Just one day." She pointed out the window and there it was, a big old celebrity cruise ship. Not one of those cheap carnival cruises. Celebrity. Nope, celebrity cruises are not for cheap-ass backpackers. Then I said, "Oh, so do you take a lot of cruises?" She said, "I practically live on a cruise ship. I take 7 or 8 cruises a year." I said, "Wow, 7 or 8, huh? Do you work on a cruise ship?" She laughed and said, "No, I just take a lot of cruises." I said, "Wow, I'd like to have your job." She said, "My job is cruising. I don't really work. I don't have a job." I said, "Really? You win the lottery or something?" Because she was only about 38 years old. In fact, I asked her. She told me, 38. Then I asked the obvious, being that I pry sometimes, you know. I said, "If you don't work, how can you afford to cruise all the time?" She says, "My dad died and left me a nice big inheritance. So I don't have to work. I can cruise the rest of my life." So I pried a little more and said, "So what'd your dad do?" She said, "He worked for the U.S. government." And I said, "And he did what for the government?" She said, "He worked in the shipyards." I thought, wow, he must have been a big cheese in the Defense Department. Then she said, "He was a welder." I said, "Wow, welders make that kind of dough?" She said, "When he died, he was collecting 3 government pensions. A military pension, a welder's pension, and some other government pension she couldn't explain very well herself." Then I said, "Wow, he must have made some pretty good investments." She said, "No, he was just a simple guy, no investments, just a paid-for house." Which instantly reminded me of a guy I spoke about on this show probably 10 years ago now. Turns out I met a guy who was a security guard at the U.S. Embassy in Guatemala. American guy, of course, living in Guatemala because he was doing security at the embassy. He told me he was collecting 3 pensions. He was getting a military pension, a sheriff's pension, and he said he was getting a pension because he was a retired U.S. Marshal. You know, they fly around in airplanes incognito. He told me, if I remember this right, he was making $180,000 a year from just his government pensions. And I said to him, "So then why are you still working? Why are you here in Guatemala working as a guard at the embassy?" He said because he was retired out and getting those pensions when he was only 58 years old. He knew Spanish, wasn't into golf bowling or just sitting around, so he said he took the job to have something to do and stay active. Now, even way back when, some 10 years ago, that whole discussion really shocked me that a guy could make a $180,000 pension from the U.S. government and not even be a high-end administrator or executive. In fact, this guy didn't even have a college degree. And then I meet this obese 38-year-old tattooed lady, belly hanging out in the laundromat, telling me more of the same. Cruising the world for the rest of her life, thanks to her dad's huge nest egg from his government jobs. Is it any wonder that some of the biggest, smartest investors in the world are saying that the U.S. government is absolutely ready to implode? You have to wonder, how long can this craziness go on? The question is, do you want to be in Cleveland, Milwaukee, New Jersey, Miami, when the system implodes and the walls come tumbling down? Or do you have a plan B going? How far along are you on that plan B? All right, now an email from Dan, not his real name. All right, this one might get me kicked off the air, but we're going to read it anyway. Stop me if I read this before, because sometimes I just forget. After 1,200 and something expat file shows and sort of a spotty filing system, especially when I'm traveling, sometimes I can't remember if I read a certain email or not, especially when I'm on the road, which I am right now, and is probably why you're thinking the microphone sucks, because I'm using a portable mic right now. Anyway, Dan, not his real name, asks a question in the title of this email. He asks, did you know that wokeness and ESD, equality, diversity, and inclusion, is killing off the Canadian mining industry? I'll be paraphrasing this as usual to cut out the boring parts. He says, I'm a longtime listener, Dan, not my real name. I'm in the Canadian gold mining business. Mining is one of the biggest Canadian industries. Something is changing here that the regular woke media will never talk about. So for your perusal and vindication, I submit the following extremely un-PC and unwoke screed for your approval. Though, Johnny, I wouldn't blame you if you avoided reading it on your show. All right, here it goes. He says, EDI stands for Equality, Diversity, and Inclusion. It's gaining momentum very rapidly in the Canadian mining and commodity analyst business. In a recent discussion I took part in, analysts were grilling mining companies. He says the first question an $80 million mining company faced was from a black female who wanted to know why their board of directors lacked diversity. There were no technical questions at all asked, just questions about the wokeness in the hierarchy of the mining company. Too many white guys was the complaint. The problem is, he says, but no one talks about it. By implication, questions like that constitute some evidence that certain people of color and women and LGBTQs cannot stand on their own feet and rise in a company through their own merit. They have to have some kind of equity law to make it happen. Then he says, you might be thinking by my sort of racist screed here that I'm a disgruntled white guy who hit the glass ceiling for white guys. Nope, Johnny, I'm an Indian from India. He says, in India, where I'm from and where affirmative action policy has had a long history because of our caste system, it's all about the dots on our foreheads, you know. And you might recall the word untouchables comes from India. It meant a caste so poor they were deemed untouchable by regular castes. It meant you should never actually physically touch them or somehow be degraded yourself. A nasty concept for sure, but we had it in India for hundreds of years before the Brits ever came over and so-called civilized us. That said, I have no choice but to question in my mind, but never verbally out loud, how competent or incompetent affirmative action and equity hires really are. For example, would I elect eye surgery from a doctor from a pool of equity or affirmative action candidates? Would I select my airline pilot from a pool of affirmative action or equity candidates? Would you? These days, we have no choice as EDI, equity, diversity, and inclusion, continues and grows. He says, suffering the most, I fear, will be the competent and capable minorities who are dispersed among the meritless beneficiaries of equity, diversity, inclusive policies. For example, he says, during my first visit to a South African gold mining company in Johannesburg more than a decade ago, I first thought I had come to a car show. Why did the parking lot have some of the most expensive and flashy cars in the world? That was not the case in the so-called bad old days when affirmative action was not yet practiced and the old guard was still in control of the mines. He says black economic empowerment, the South African versions of equity, diversity, etc., had enabled blacks to rise in the leadership hierarchy without any need for stringent merit requirements. And suddenly, parking lots were full of big, ostentatious, flashy cars. Isn't it odd, too, he says, that as time went by and apartheid fell, South Africa's infrastructure has fallen apart in lockstep. Power outages, lack of water supply, increased crime, terrible roads and potholes, general lack of law and order, etc. He says South Africa was once the lone island of first world prosperity on the African continent, and now it's just another third world embarrassment. But to say so out loud is forbidden. The woke people will pounce on you and worse. And God forbid you say anything nasty about Nelson Mandela. That'll get you more than canceled. Even though, technically, he was a terrorist who organized bombings and killed many innocents and children. But no, he's a saint and a hero and gets a Nobel Prize. Gets roads and bridges named after him in many countries that have no idea he was really a terrorist. Funny how when terrorists win their cause, the history books record them as heroes. I could never talk about that in mixed company. Then he says, Johnny, do you remember a few years back when the Boeing 737 MAX airplane suffered two fatal accidents? To what extent do you think those accidents were attributable to poor design work done by engineers who were equity hires, not done on a merit basis? Such risks and accidents will happen as the workforce IQ inevitably gets diluted by affirmative action and equity hires. Just the thought of it seems too politically incorrect to even consider. And what about the extent of the recent forest fires in California or Canada or Maui, Hawaii, and the recent power outages in Texas? We'll never know if people were elevated to positions of authority without concern for merit, intelligence, or competence. And if you mention it in mixed company, do you have the risk of being canceled, fired, or seen as bigoted? Meanwhile, Johnny, he says, errors accumulate in all critical fields due to social hires that no one challenges. He says, Johnny, the West is essentially copying the South African model of social change, which is anti-meritocratic and erodes the institutions and civilization. I've worked in South Africa, and it's being destroyed right now by its meritless hiring policy. But notice how the Western media never comments on it. So I'm wondering, Johnny, if equity hires have infiltrated Latin America yet, and to what degree? Dan, me, Johnny, you're funny you should ask. We'll get to it on the next show. We're out of time here today.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!